Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. This is Westchester on the Level with your host, Hezzy Eris.
Good morning, everybody. Excuse me. Today's Wednesday. It's July 24th, 10 o'clock on the Eastern Seaboard. My name is Hezzy Eris. I'm your host today. And we're expecting to get a call from Jose Roman. He's originally from Puerto Rico. He's going to be a commentator for us today. We're going to discuss the crisis that has engulfed Puerto Rico at a heightened state due to the demeaning and derogatory statements that were attributed to Puerto Rico Governor Ricardo Rosello. So a lot has changed. When we spoke to Mr. Roman yesterday, we didn't expect some of the breaking news which has taken place. It seems that the Puerto Rican Governor Ricardo Rosello is expected to resign, and he's expected to resign today. So Puerto Rico Governor Ricardo Rosello is expected to resign today after nearly 2 weeks of widespread protests sparked by the publication of offensive chat messages with advisors, several of whom have already stepped down, according to reports. Now, the embattled governor plans to deliver a farewell announcement that will be broadcast before noon today. That's what sources told local newspaper El Nuevo Día. Now, Rosello will apparently be replaced by Justice Secretary Wanda Vasquez, whom protesters reject because of her ties to him, according to news outlets. Normally, the next person in line would be the Secretary of State, but the position has been vacant since the recent resignation of Luis Rivera Marin. Now, protesters had cheered reports of Rosello's imminent departure late Tuesday, but warned that it would not end the demonstrations now entering their 12th day. The demonstrations were sparked by the publication on July 13 of chat messages in which Rosello and advisors used profane language to describe female politicians and openly gay Puerto Ricans like Ricky Martin. The governor also has been hammered over his handling of 2017's Hurricane Maria, alleged corruption in his administration, and the island's bankruptcy process. Now, several of the closest aides have resigned over the scandal, including his chief of staff, Ricardo Yerendi, who landed in his who handed his resignation on Tuesday amid concerns for the safety of his family after threats. His resignation is effective July 31. Now, on Tuesday, yesterday, Puerto Rican officials executed search warrants for the mobile phones of Rosello and 11 of his aides involved in the leaked Telegram message group chats. Telegram is supposed to be anonymous. In fact, I also use it, but then there's another service as well, similar to it. So far, only Yerandi has said he turned in his phone, according to Reuters. Justice Department spokeswoman Mariana Corbian declined to say whether Rosello had surrendered his phone. Puerto Rico's Justice Department first demanded the phones on July 17 as part of its probe into the chat scandal nicknamed Ricky Leaks, and after Ricardo Rosello. So Rosello was 40, the first-term governor in his first elected office, has resisted calls to step down as leader of the U.S. territory and its 3.2 million residents, though he has vowed not to seek re-election in 2020. The people are talking and I have to listen, Rosello said in a statement on Tuesday after apologizing several times for the chats and asking Puerto Ricans to give him another chance. But the island's leading newspaper, prominent Democratic officials, and President Trump have all called on Rosello to step down. Quote, he's a terrible governor. You have totally grossly incompetent leadership at the top of Puerto Rico, Trump said at a White House session on Monday. So go figure. So that's what's happening. Now let's move back to our studio screen in the hope that our guest is here. Yes, he is. Great. Good morning, Jose Roman. Thank you for your patience. I had to read the latest news that I hope you've heard about the resignation expected today of Ricardo Rosello, the governor of Puerto Rico, before 12 noon. this is totally unexpected because he was adamant he wouldn't step down.
Well, I don't think it was unexpected because of the pressure of the people of Puerto Rico, that this is unprecedented, that all these protests on all these massive movement asking, demanding the resignation of Rosselló has come to this moment where he doesn't have no choice to resign. However, he's going to, what I have read just recently is that he's just expecting to make sure that, you know, that the legislators are deciding to impeach him. So when that comes through the tooth, he will resign. But he's just waiting for that to make sure that he doesn't have a way out.
So basically he's resigning before.
Yes.
Right, so that's expected today before 12 noon, so that's very interesting. Well, that's what's been reported. We're not sure if it'll happen, but it seems logical. And then,
the rumors have been
right now.
Yeah, some of the rumors have been that he's already out of Puerto Rico, that he has left Puerto Rico. Yes. According to some sources, they had seen him at, you know, one of the small airports near San Juan.
Okay.
Leaving the, you know, the
I gotta ask
and
you.
he has recorded already a video stating that, you know, that the reason
he's,
for
he's
his
he's
resignation.
Recorded what? I didn't hear
a video. A video
of
recording. He has recorded.
Oh, editorial. Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, do me a favor. Is it possible for you to get closer to your phone because it's a little bit difficult to hear you?
Sorry,
I want to make sure that people do hear you.
What about now?
I wanted to ask you,
it's
about
now?
The same, but not quite. But I don't want to, hold you off. Hopefully it'll all be heard.
I can hear you,
and hopefully it'll all work out at the end when the audio clip is available. Well, mm-hmm. I guess the thing that matters more than the outcome that is expected and anticipated by so many and seems to be pointing in that direction, what's been the reason that there's so much anger in Puerto Rico? Evidently, the comments by Rosselló has been so horrendous that it sparked this anger to explode. And why did it even explode with this sort of expression of demeaning people who suffered from Hurricane Maria, demeaning gays, particularly Ricky Martin, and other issues as well. And, the corruption that's been there. So what is causing all this anger?
Well, basically, ever since Maria, the aftermath of Maria, people from Puerto Rico has been struggling on a daily basis. So this is the drop that, you know, that filled the cup. That's what triggered this massive movement against, you know, Rosselló and demanding his resignation because of the outcry of the people of Puerto Rico to have a better government. To have a better
okay,
you know,
but wait,
system,
before
to have better
on,
quality
you know,
of life.
Wait, before you go on, Jose, you have to understand that you know this intimately. Our listeners may not. So when you say the struggles, what are the struggles? I understand that people who've earned a living working for the government, some of them are now retired, and there's been a reduction in their pay that they legally worked for and they're entitled to. There's been a reduction in Social Security benefits. There's a reduction in support systems as well. The island is under stress.
Okay, let's just point out something. I mean, something very important.
Okay.
Let's put it within the historical context of why we're struggling. We're struggling because we have a debt of over 90 90,000.
You have a debt of over $70 billion that was imposed by the U.S. government.
Yeah, it's close to 90. The actual one is close to 90.
Oh, but, is it? Did it go up that much?
Yes, it has been going up. But what I'm saying
is
that the United States has imposed to Puerto Rico what they call a financial control board. What does that mean?
Right.
It means that board has been appointed by the president of the United States. Puerto Rico doesn't have any hearsay about it. They will decide it economically what is, according to them, best for Puerto Rico, which at the end, what is best for Puerto Rico is not best for the financial control board, which is manipulating and controlling and making sure that all of those Wall Street investors in Puerto Rico, they will get the interest before services are being provided to Puerto Rico. So within that context.
Okay, but wait. Again, you're going a little bit too fast. So let's explain what happened. Originally, America wanted to, were looking for a cheaper location for their businesses, and they suggested Puerto Rico would be the place, and they gave incentive for companies to move there. And yet the real problem is not that a development was taking place, but rather that the government in Puerto Rico wasn't able to tax and get any benefit from these developments, yet the debt was incurred. And it was investors from Wall Street and wherever else they came from, they were exacting a price for all this development. And it rose to what I last thought about $70 billion, but now I guess it's at $90 billion. And there's no way to pay for it because there's no mechanism even to get taxes. So how is the island supposed to pay this debt off? And that was imposed by the U.S. government.
Yes, as you said, the reason why we're in this predicament is, as you indicated before, is that the economy of Puerto Rico hasn't been sustainable at all. Because what they were doing is they were borrowing money from all of these investors, and they were having what we call an artificial economy, where we couldn't fulfill our needs because we didn't have the development, we didn't have a diversified economy.
Right.
So because of that, we have throughout the different governors, they've been collecting money from all of these companies in order to fulfill the budget. But it was always negative. That's why. And we came to this term where they would even allow Puerto Rico to declare bankruptcy. So that's why they created this financial control board, which they are just taking very drastic actions. Like, for instance, right now, my brother, who is a retired teacher, as well as his wife, they are going to get 10% cut on their pensions. That's only these people, and most of the members of the retirees, the funds are in bankruptcy. So we are, in a daily basis, we are struggling. We are struggling in terms of, having a quality of life that we don't have. And besides that, we have lost almost 1 million people in the last 10 years because of the depression and economic situation in Puerto Rico. So that means that the people who are in the productive years, that between the years of they are productive, what they're doing, they are leaving Puerto Rico. All the talent that Puerto Rico has, they're leaving for better opportunities outside in the mainland, which is United States. So I got to ask you,
is there a mechanism? Well, the governor of Puerto Rico is limited in his capacity. And but I remember in a few years back, the nation of Argentina was in very, very heavy debt. And at the end, they decided they were not going to pay back, and they were able to do that. And eventually they were able to work their way back, and I think they began fresh without having to pay those debts. So they defaulted on those debts. But But the island of Puerto Rico doesn't have that capacity on its own. And why don't we hear from more politicians that say, you know what, the U.S. government imposed this sort of structure on Puerto Rico. We're not earning any money whatsoever. This was a setup, and every time there was money due, rather than to pay it, the government said, well, let's get more investors to back up more debt on top of what you already owe. And it got to be outrageously high. It was more money is due by Puerto Rico than the nation of Greece when they went into trouble a few years ago.
Exactly.
And it took them over 10 years to get out.
Well, basically,
so,
you know,
is there
the
any,
bottom line
is there any capacity for Puerto Rico to do anything or not?
No, it's not. You know why? Because most people don't know
why.
This. Puerto Rico is a colony of the United States. We are we are what the United States calls a non-incorporated territory, meaning
territory.
What does that mean? Well, that means that whatever piece of legislation that we can do in Puerto Rico, they can be overturned by the United States government.
Government. Mm-hmm.
So that's what I mean. We don't have the right to self-determination. We don't have the right to decide if our own business. We cannot, you know,
right.
do any kind of a commercial business with any nations unless it's through the United States Marine Merchants, which is the highest one in the whole world, meaning that we pay at least 40% more of anybody else because we use the United
right.
States merchant. So that's
correct.
Another situation that, you know, that we have to get rid of that. And they are not allowing to because there's a lot of economical interest involved. They don't care about people, well-being
no.
and safety. They just care about making money.
But
that's the bottom line. That's the capitalism.
Will this crisis, though, create an upswell of interest for independence of Puerto Rico that is we've been hearing maybe the last 50 years, maybe even longer. I haven't been following Puerto Rico all these years or for as long as that, but it was quiet for a long time, but there was always an independence movement. Is that going to get a resurgence? Do you already see a resurgence of interest for independence? And what would Puerto Rico do in
that,
order
you know,
to declare themselves independent?
Yeah. Well, we have a choice. I mean, you know, we know that the United States, they are not going to provide Puerto Rico with a statehood because a statehood implies that we have two senators. A statehood implies that we have a lot of legislators from Puerto Rico. And we are not, you know, part of the American, no, the white Americans. I mean, they don't, you know, they don't consider us like, you know, through Maria, like a second class citizens.
Okay.
And besides that, Puerto Rico is different from Hawaii and Alaska that they were asking for to be a statehood, the majority, not in Puerto Rico. It's very fragmented. It's very split.
Right.
And
so
the other thing
question,
is that we have, you know.
You're suggesting, when you're suggesting independence, you're really not saying it's independence. You just say, you just suggested that Puerto Rico could become a state. But the point is,
I'm not saying that.
I'm talking about independence.
What I'm saying is that we should discard to be a statehood because it's not going to be given to Puerto Rico. Because, you know, all the presidents of the United States have indicated that. We should go for
indicated what?
Independence. Independence. We should
they
you know,
will go for independence?
Yes. We should,
no.
you know, request to be our own nation, to be separated from the United States and do our own. Self determination. According to the United Nations, we are part of, you know, we're still in the committee of the decolonization. You know, the Articles 17, 14, 15 states that Puerto Rico deserves the right of self-determination.
Okay, wait
there.
A minute.
Every year we go to the
Jose,
United Nations.
Jose, please, you keep going on without explaining the basis for it. So
All right.
Are you saying that the United States is agreeing that Puerto Rico, if they want to go that way, can become independent, or you're saying the United Nations Charter says they have a right to self-determination?
No.
So who's saying what?
Okay, the United Nations Charter has stated that Puerto Rico should be allowed to self-determination. Okay. United States won't allow that. That's why they went back to that's why they went way back when they developed the Commonwealth of Puerto Rico in 1954. They went to United Nations,
right,
where there was a very new organization, only like 50 countries. They were there, and they were able to pass the resolution where Puerto Rico, at that point, in the 50s, that the Commonwealth of Puerto Rico, it was fine that there was not a colony. However, in the 60s, when all of these colonies from Africa, that they became independent, and there was a movement, there was a different movement, and there were more numerous, more than 100 nations already there.
Correct.
So that's why they came this resolution that it was enacted.
Okay,
but
so I understand. So the impetus was that the colonizers of the world, the great powers of the world in the 1950s, like Britain and France and Belgium and even Germany, they were relinquishing their control over former colonies. Those colonies became independent, and that happened throughout the world. But then it was never something that was agreed to by the United States government. But if we look at it today, forgetting what was done in the 1950s, is there a financial capacity for the island to consider becoming independent, declaring themselves independent of the United States? Because even now, if you were born in Puerto Rico, you're regarded as a citizen, but you don't have a right to vote. You don't have a right to vote for a president. You don't even have a congressperson representing the island. I think they're just allowed to sit in.
That is what they call a representative, but she can speak or she cannot vote.
Right.
Which is nothing.
Yeah, exactly. A representative, right.
Yeah.
Is there any other place from the United States? Does Guam have a representative? Is that a similar issue?
Yeah, similar issue.
Do you know?
And the Marshall Islands as well as the Virgin Islands. The Virgin Islands.
And actually, when we look at that, except for the Virgin Islands were British at one time, Puerto Rico was part of the Spanish colonized nations. The Philippines became independent. They were part of the Spanish thing. And Guam was, I think, was also Spanish at one time.
What are the options
for Puerto Rico?
Well, it's going to be, we have the resources. I mean, we have the manpower, because we have a very high skilled population, and also we have a lot of educated people in Puerto Rico that we can turn around the economy and make it sustainable. However, it has never been an incentive to do that. Why? Because as a colony, we consume like 90% of what we eat from the United States. So the metropolis is the one who's taking advantage of the colony. So that's the reason why they have always created that impotency a view about Puerto Rico. We cannot be a republic because we don't have the resources. Yes, we do. I mean, if we do it in a sustainable planning way, it can be accomplished.
But in order to begin the process of independence, which seems to be getting a groundswell of interest, particularly based on the corruption of the governor and his administration, and also the imposition of an unfair model for surviving as an entity, as just even as an island, as part of as a territory. There's just no way for them to pay their debt whatsoever. So it's like a built-in mechanism to failure, which is what it's become, and now it's untenable. So, for example, there are probably over 1 million people in the New York metropolitan area that have a lineage or a connection and a descendancy and ancestry that is based in Puerto Rico. Are those
exactly.
million people willing to be supportive, do you know? And also there's a large Puerto Rican population in Florida, and there are probably other places as well. Do you think there'd be support for an independent Puerto Rico among so many people?
Well, you know, this is, you know, due to the fact that people have been galvanized with the same goal. I think
yes.
that the movement is coming to that end, and the movement is coming to for us to be able to decide our own destiny.
Okay.
So, and there are even more than 1 million. There are there are around 4 million Puerto Rican descendants in the United States.
Really?
I mean,
4 million.
Scattered,
oh my gosh.
Yes, yeah, scattered throughout the whole United States country. Yeah, there are a lot
okay.
of them. Yeah, we are. We came in the 19, you know, we came since 1920 to
uh-huh.
the United States.
Okay, I didn't know.
Yes.
Okay.
Early. And in the 1950s, that was the mass, you know, one of the contemporary massive episodes of immigration from Puerto Rico
uh-huh.
to the United States in the 50s.
Okay.
So we lost like another million people of the population in that point. Because
mm-hmm.
that was the reason they encourage that in order to the same thing that they are doing now. They encourage that because it was a big economical, situation, bad
it was like
Puerto Rico during the 50s. And
right.
as well in the 10s. Every time that there is a depression without or problems, economical problems, throughout the world, especially in Puerto Rico, they encourage
mm-hmm.
migration because less people, so there are less services they have to provide. So they did
yes.
it in the, Yes. They did it in the 30s
yeah.
and they did it in the 50s, and now they're doing it now.
Uh-huh. One thing that I came to realize as we've moved into the technological age and we have computer systems and Wi-Fi and internet service, Puerto Rico has that. And yet, the rest of the Caribbean nations do not. So it's almost impossible to get Wi-Fi in Cuba, or Wi-Fi in the other islands as well. And Puerto Rico could have always been the central point and to sell this capacity. And yet, I've never seen that done. Is that something that the government of the United States has hindered Puerto Rico from establishing so they can become more financially independent? Or is America helping Puerto Rico becoming more self-sufficient, maybe not independent is the right word, but self-sufficient in their capacity, as every state is interested? No?
I don't think they have never encouraged Puerto Rico to make Puerto Rico more commercially independent, because there's a link.
Yeah,
there's a link. We economically, everything goes through
uh-huh.
you know, too. As a matter of fact, talking about technology, we have a university they call el Colegio de Mayagüez, the University of Puerto Rico.
Okay.
That they
in Mayagüez.
They come throughout the South America to recruit, engineers because of the quality of the education that they provide there. Even, there are a lot of them that
mm-hmm.
they go to the NASA to work on the NASA.
Right.
Because, the quality and the commitment of the Puerto Ricans to study and get better. But
mm-hmm.
they have to leave because there's no jobs in the country. So they have to adventure
right.
other countries to be able to provide for the families. And yes, also, absolutely. You know, a point that we have to discuss that is very important, why the United States will never allow Puerto Rico to become independent or statehood, is especially, you know, independent is because our geopolitical position. Remember?
Which is why explain that.
We are at the gate from the north and the south. And guess what happened?
Yes, you are.
When they invaded Granada, everything was orchestrated in Puerto Rico. When they invaded Dominican Republic in 1965, everything was from Puerto Rico. When they did, you know, when they went to Nicaragua, the Sandinistas, everything, you know, and all that stuff there, everything was from here.
Right.
There's two big bases in Puerto Rico. Two big bases, military bases in Puerto Rico.
Vieques?
No, Vieques is gone. You know, we got rid of the marina in Vieques. Remember in the 90s? That's done.
Oh, wasn't sure.
Yeah, they, you know, Vieques and Culebra, they are no longer there. But
they left.
We're still having, you know, people in Vieques and Culebra, they're still suffering because they were doing practices
polluted
with their live ammunition.
And they were suffering wasn't it?
Yes, very polluted. And they were supposed to, part of the arrangement and commitment was that they were going to clean the island,
right.
And they haven't done it yet. In the meanwhile, people are still dying from the high levels of mercury, high levels of the respiratory infections and all that. And most people don't know that. But that the geopolitical position of Puerto Rico is very important.
Well, I got to ask you know, it's very interesting. It's very interesting. I read, I think it was yesterday, that the New York State Attorney General, Letitia James, suggested yesterday that it was time for Joseo to actually step down, and she had asked for that. Yet at the same time, how come Puerto Rico has not filed a petition against the government showing and revealing all these inconsistencies based on a historical perspective? To win their right for at least self-sufficiency in a different capacity than the present. Why is that not done? Or has it been tried and failed?
I think it has been tried in the past and it has failed because of the of the obstruction of, you know, different, you know, all, you know, the sources, different, you know,
right.
And different
administrations,
you know,
and different on the island as well as in the mainland as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I got to ask you then: do you feel that there are options that are available to the people who are still living on the island, and do they have the ability to hunker down for a few years? Because it's not going to happen overnight. The jobs, there are a lot of jobs that need to be taken care of, but will there be any capacity to pay? Will people be able to make a living on the island, or are they used to a richer environment and that's why they're now living in the New York metropolitan area and Florida and other parts of the country?
Well,
will people make that sacrifice?
Yeah, but we have always been very resilient. And people of Puerto Rico are very patriotic, and a lot of them, they don't want to leave. What do they do? They will adjust to the circumstances.
Right.
What do they do? So they will adjust to provide to the basic needs. So so instead of going out to eat, they don't go out to eat, they don't have any pleasure to do anything, just, you know, live, you know, a very limited life because of the circumstances
limited
of the economy in Puerto Rico. But
guess you want to know the truth.
I think that, you know, this movement that they have just arrived, because as you see, this is across the nation of Puerto Rico, that they are everyone is united to only one goal, to remove Rosselló from the power. So they are people from different. Yes.
Yeah, but Jose, at the end of the day, okay, so Rosselló is removed from power, and then what? Nothing has changed except that you got rid of a ineffective, corrupt governor who is willing to denigrate his own people because he thinks he has the power to do so. And now he realizes, no, he's going to have to step down. And we expect that to happen today before 12 noon, which is the same local time as we have here in the New York metropolitan areas in San Juan. So the question is, what happens after that? Like every country in the world that's now independent had to make a decision at one time or another when they decided to move and become independent, no matter what the infrastructure was like before, that they were going to suffer. And they did all suffer. Every country in Africa, every country that became independent, anywhere in the world had to suffer in that transition stage. Are people willing to do that?
I think that, people are, they are becoming aware of that. The only way that we can have some changes is to demonstrate, to protest,
yes,
to unite, and to have common ground, and forget about the two party lines that we have, like United States, that we have to have a coalition of leaders where they can galvanize a more conscious, create more conscious about the status quo of Puerto Rico that has to be changed, that it's not sustainable,
yeah,
that we need to do some changes. And I think that's coming because you see, putting together more than 700,000 people in one day. I mean, out of 3.2 million people in Puerto Rico, that's an accomplishment.
That's what?
I mean, you can see the outcry of the people on those demonstrations. They want change.
Yes.
And this
question about the change, is this because there's a new generation of people who are growing up in Puerto Rico who recognize that they have gotten, for lack of a better word, the shaft, and that the nation, that the United States really doesn't seem to care as much as they used to say they did, and that there's no opportunity if they want to, if they take pride in the island and they want to make a living there. They don't necessarily want to move to New York or Florida or any other place. They want to spend their life on the island. But, are there options? I'm sure the European Union would be very happy to make investments in Puerto Rico. Spain certainly would. And there are others that would want to take advantage of a new place that, just for the United States, like it's an offshoot of political and even military prospects from Puerto Rico for the rest of the Caribbean. That would be just as powerful for not only Europe but even China and who knows who else.
That's what I was saying.
China's making investments all over South America now like crazy.
Exactly. That's what I was saying, that China would love to invest, in a new nation like Puerto Rico, an independent nation. I mean, there's so many countries
mm-hmm.
that they would be eager to invest because, the position that we have, that we can move, throughout the world easily. We don't have to go to the, Panama Channel, anything like that. We're just
right
in the middle. I mean, we have a privileged geographical position. We can utilize that. We can work on that and try to.
So,
do you think
this is just a dream, or do you think that there are people already that have begun to think about Puerto Rico's future rather than to be submerged under this crisis right now, because the crisis is a possible catalyst of self-sufficiency or direction toward that end, or total submission to the dynamic that exists at present that caused all this crisis. Is Puerto Rico going through its own personal Arab Spring, which seems to be that spring seems to have engaged a lot of people in many countries around the world. People are sick and tired of the old systems.
Yes, I think that people are taking actions. People in Puerto Rico are doing it. For instance, they are very unhappy about with the president of the United States, the way that been mistreating Puerto Rico, the way that that we've been getting less than we deserve compared to the other other areas in the United States. They said that he has given us $90 million. No, it hasn't been that. $90 billion Only like 10% of that we have received. And out of those 10%, the Rosselló administration has been corrupting and getting money from his friends and family, also of his inner circle. But it has been only 10%.
Well, evidently, that seems to be the basis for a lot of this uproar and the reason for the demonstrations. Does Puerto Rico possess the intellectual capacity that's required in order to be able to galvanize the people on the island to take action? Are there developers that would be interested in making investments in the island that may not even be on the island, but there are also companies that would want to invest in the nation and where you'd be able to somehow or another get the taxing capacity in order to be able to get funding for future and also to pay back debt for those that make the investments into the future. Is that part of the capacity of Puerto Rico?
Yes, we do. The first thing that we have to do is that this debt. The first thing that we have to do is that this debt that we have to tell them that we are not going to pay.
Okay.
That they have already collected it twice.
Uh-huh.
They have already collected the money twice in interest throughout the years.
Okay.
So that's been paid already. So we have to do, as you indicated before, we have to do the same thing what we, that Argentina did. We're not paying anymore because it's not payable.
Yes.
So that's what
we have to do. It's not payable.
And secondly, we have to be out in the international market to make deals with, different companies and different governments that they would be willing and able to invest in Puerto Rico. Like, for instance, you mentioned China. You mentioned the European Union and other countries all over. Yes.
Absolutely.
They are eager to. But at this point,
yes,
we are not allowed to do that. We are not even allowed to do business with Dominican Republic openly, which is our next door neighbor, because of the United States, rules and regulations that have to go through the United States.
I didn't know that.
No,
I didn't know
we,
that.
We cannot do our own trade, deals with any country. No.
Uh-huh.
Everything goes through the United States. We don't have the capacity. We don't have the power to do that. Remember, we still, once again, I reiterated that we are a classic colony. The colonies don't have any rights. We just respond to the needs of the metropolis, and that's what we are.
Well, that's
in the
question.
In the 21st
century. Is there a mechanism to declare one's independence, assuming you have the capacity to endure some of the suffering that will take place in the transition, the intellectual capacity to be guided by, forthright people who will do what they need to embellish a new nation, and getting support as well from the international community should America decide not to even consider making the investment. But there'll probably be a tremendous amount of fundraising capacity from people who will side by your becoming independent, the nation of Puerto Rico becoming independent, also citizens that former citizens that are now living elsewhere. So the potential is very great to have such a large diaspora, you know, of 4 million people in the United States alone. That should be a very, very big potential. But where does Puerto Rico go to declare their independence? And who will support it? Do we know? Or is that yet to be determined?
Well, it has been, you know, we have had like 3 different referendums.
Yes,
you know,
right. And
they
all
failed, referendums, they all failed because the 3 referendums, the last one, people didn't even go to vote. So it was a fiasco. But the previous one, they included the 3. They included the statehood, independence,
right,
and they included the Commonwealth, which is not a form of a government. This is just still the status quo.
Right.
So that's
right.
Why most people have been boycotting that, because we want something that it would be either a statehood or independent, not something in the middle that doesn't mean anything, that we don't have any autonomy.
Okay.
Because the state, you know, the Commonwealth doesn't have any autonomy, so it has to be a statehood or independent.
I understand the logic of that explanation. It makes all the sense in the world to me, because I wouldn't want to consider a Commonwealth when I know it means absolutely nothing. It means status quo.
Exactly.
And to reject statehood is even worse than the status quo. And to consider statehood, that seems to make sense. However, what was the reason that those 3 referendums in the past failed? Is it simply a desire for a financial capacity that people earned, but now will lose if Puerto Rico becomes independent, because there won't be support from the United States. So it's a financial decision which may now conceivably change. Are people in Puerto Rico ready for another referendum, or is it too soon even to think about?
This might be the turning point now, or, you know, through all of this demonstration or that we might, you know, people might be more openly and willing to demand one now, because of the, you know, circumstances that we are living right now. But once again remember that that won't be easy to Puerto Rico to become independent because of what we represent for the United States. So it won't be easy. Like, you know, way back, you know, we talk in history. Nobody's going to give up anything that they can utilize it in the way that they want it for their own
interests. I understand that. But will America side by whoever the powers that be in the United States and say, well, no, if the story, which is pertinent, if the story is explained of the, I guess, the lack of respect that the island has gotten, but it's returned a tremendous amount of wealth and power and capacity for the United States, international policies, certainly in the Caribbean, and even in South America to a great extent,
but no
return for the public. So will people say, okay, this is cool, let's keep on doing it? Or will they say, well, maybe the Puerto Ricans, they deserve a right for self-determination as something else?
Yeah, but remember that most of the nations in Latin America, even in the world, United States is the most powerful economic country in the world, right?
Right.
So what do they do?
Correct.
They control economically most of the nations. So most of the nations in South America, they are abiding by whatever the United States says. They are not going to go. They are not going to go against them because they are neo colonies. That's what they are. I mean, take for instance, they don't have, they just rely on the monetary banks, which is controlled by the United States, and all those, international banks.
That's
so
very true.
They are going to continue to perpetuate the status quo.
Okay, well, that's a very, very valid point that you're making, and America does have that capacity. Still, they control the banking system, they can control economies, they can embargoes, they can do all sorts of things. So does Puerto Rico have any options? Are they able to solicit the United States government to act in a different way? Well, this woman that's taking over for Roselló when he resigns today, assuming that he does, she's part of his regime. So not much is going to change in the next year and a half until another vote for governor. So what does one do now when there's so much anger and the economy is coming to a halt? Even the tourist business is failing because a lot of the shipping. The ships that come and visit Puerto Rico, they're not stopping. They're afraid of, I don't know what they're afraid of. Nothing's happened. No one's getting hurt and no one's being threatened. So I don't know why they're not coming on, but maybe that's liability law, something that precludes them from landing in a place where there are so many demonstrations. So what are the options for Puerto Rico, or is it too soon to tell?
It is. You just mentioned on the lady who's going to take over. The name is Wanda Vasquez.
Yeah.
She's the secretary.
Wanda.
She's the secretary of justice.
Right.
Yeah. She's the secretary of justice. And guess what? She was involved in some irregularity just recently.
She was
investigated just recently. She's being investigated.
Uh huh. Mm-hmm.
Because of a conflict.
But she's going to be the one that moves up the ladder. So that it's only going to continue. And she was part of the corruption in the past.
Oh, she's part.
She's likely to continue the corruption into the future.
They have indicted at least like five people already in the your administration. The secretary, secretary of education, she was just recently indicted like two weeks ago.
Oh, wow.
And there was, a few more people, at least five people of his inner circle has been indicted. And there's more to come, according to the Fed.
Press.
There's still a lot going on there. But out of all of this, what I can see is that we have the potential, we have the will, and as I say, we're resilient. I think that this is going to galvanize more support to the people of Puerto Rico, and this protest is creating conscious about that what we are facing is unsustainable, and we need changes, drastic changes. Hopefully, the new generations will see it that way, because the old generations, they are in the comfort mode, so they don't want to
have
any changes.
Mode.
Yeah. Like I was, when I was early in my years in the university, I was a militant. I was, fighting against, all of these issues. So this is, long-lasting issues. As a matter of fact, I'm going to Puerto Rico this week.
Okay.
I'm going.
Well, you still have relatives in Puerto Rico.
Yes,
right?
I do.
Yeah, your family there.
Because I'm part of the migration. I came here in the 80s, so I still here. So my goal is to go back and fight for the rights of the Puerto Rican. We are one of the few nations that you could be a fourth generation Puerto Ricans, and we still consider ourselves Puerto Rican, no matter what.
Well, yeah, exactly. Why not? That makes sense. But also because you're a Commonwealth and you don't feel that you're getting full representation in the United States government, like you said, it's only a representative. You don't even have senators and congressional representatives that have a voting right. They could just listen, and that's insanity. And so the connection the connection to Puerto Rico makes all the sense in the world, because the United States hasn't made Puerto Rico part of it. It's not the 51st state, and it's not independent, and yet it's a very much subservient to its master, which is the nation of the United States. So that's truly amazing. That's a big problem. So what do you see as the future?
The future.
What do you see as the future?
Well, the future has to be, we have to continue the struggle. We have to continue fighting for our rights until we reach the goal of becoming independent, to have our own nation, our own country, without any interference from any other nation.
Mm-hmm.
Be Puerto Ricans 100% and be able to control our own destinies, not having somebody else from the outside who cannot relate to our needs and our problems, and it's not, they can't relate to our culture, because that's another issue,
mm-hmm.
that Puerto Ricans we are Latinos. We are, you know, culturally we are different from the mainstream America. So that's another issue that statehood, I don't think it will go at all, because they're not going to allow a nation that I would say like 60% or 65% of the people don't speak English to become part of the United States.
That's right.
According to them, doesn't make sense. So they consider Puerto Rico like a third world country.
Mm-hmm. Well, also, there's a lot of work ahead. I would hope, Jose, that we can, maybe not every week, but maybe once a month, we can keep revisiting this issue, because especially now, more than ever before, the opportunity to move toward an independent nation state, not to be confused as a state of the United States, but an independent island, and becoming a nation rather than becoming a state. Because like you said, I don't think that there's much interest in the United States for Puerto Rico to become a state. Otherwise, it would have happened a long time ago. Just simply an anti-Latino, anti-Puerto Rican bias that keeps on surviving somehow in America? You would think after all these years, with Puerto Rico being a commonwealth, that it would have already lessened, but that doesn't seem to be the case.
No, that creates a cohesiveness among us to be culturally together, and the language and the culture and the traditions. That's what we keep together, and we are fighting, you know, against the biggest nation in the world. And we're still standing up, and we're still here. We haven't lost. We haven't gotten assimilated where the way they wanted to us to do it. Because remember, when they invaded Puerto Rico in 1898, they invaded Puerto Rico. Most people don't know that, though. We were invaded.
Yes.
Because remember in Cuba, they used the reason to the United States, got rid of the I think there was a mate, I forgot the name of the ship in Cuba, but they did it in order to create the Hispanic war, and Puerto Rico came as a possession. But that's what they've been doing.
I see.
Throughout the years, they've been trying to assimilate us. For instance, Puerto Rico was I would say they were like 100% Catholics. So they start, you know, one of them, you know, that's the way that they create, you know, assimilation. So they start infiltrating Puerto Rico with the with the Protestants and converting people to the to become Protestant and transmit the values of the, you know, of the and the way of living of the United States in order for us to forget about our roots. But they haven't succeeded on that. And that was systematically done ever since they got there. In the beginning, everything was taught in English until they couldn't, you know, everything. Even I remember my mother, that she, you know, she passed away, but she remembers when she was young that she can sing like 15, 20 songs in English, and she never spoke English.
Really?
Because that was a process. That was a process of being assimilated to the new metropole.
Right.
And, you know, and they've been doing that throughout the years. But we're still there.
I think we're still doing that in America. I think we're still doing that in America, but I think that's waning now because the younger generation and the new immigrants are saying, there's no reason for me to lose my culture, my ethnicity, my language. It's no longer necessary to prove one's allegiance to the United States if you want to come here as a new immigrant by forgetting your language and forgetting your heritage and so on. So is this all very much throwing off the control of generations that go back a very, very long time. And in the case of Puerto Rico, you're looking already five generations since the nation was, since the island was invaded back in the late 1800s. So that's five generations. That's 125 some odd years. That is amazing.
Yeah.
And yet the battle is still continuing. And I also see there's an animosity as well here. We have a large population of people from the Dominican Republic, but they're independent. But even so, a lot of animosity towards the Latino population in the metropolitan area as well. And that's also because of language and color?
Yes, I would say so. I would agree with that. Language and color, yes. We're different. I mean,
yeah.
We are not different because there's a lot of people like us here, but you know, the association that they have, you know, that you will never become a true American if you don't have that profile, if you don't fit the profile, which is what, I don't understand which one, but that's the way it's been portrayed in the media and in the... That's what we do. Well, it was glad to be with you. I gotta go.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you for making the time. I didn't realize, my God, we've been talking about an hour. So, well, I just wish you a safe trip to Puerto Rico and, you know, to become reacquainted with family. And, you know, let's stay in touch. Let's try to do this once a month and talk about the transition and what you see is happening. Because I think that one of the responsibilities of media is also to give expression to what's going on. And unfortunately, if you don't speak Spanish or you don't read Spanish, the Spanish press and the Spanish media is not transitioning a lot of the messages that one would hope we would be able to learn about Puerto Rico to the mainstream media, because they're not covering it as much as I would have hoped that they do. To be honest with you, I speak many languages, and I don't get my information about Puerto Rico from the American press. If I did, I probably would be ignorant in total.
They only cover Puerto Rico when there is a catastrophe, unless something else. But when it's issues that pertain, that they affect the community at large, they don't. I mean, they just briefly cover. That's it. But that's the way it is. Even that Spanish newspaper, El Diario, that's a garbage paper. They don't have any. El Diario is the worst. I mean, they don't cover,
really?
And they don't have, you know, a analytic, you know, analysis about
no
the, you know, about issues. You know, it's controlled by the American media as well. They're not independent.
You know, Jose, well, maybe we're very lucky because since I met you, and it's been quite a while that we've known each other, so maybe it just takes a Puerto Rican and an Israeli to get our act together. So we'll have to keep on trucking, as they say.
We do. It's always a pleasure to be with you. And
my pleasure.
And we'll continue
much
the discussion. When I come back from Puerto Rico, I will report
all the
has been there.
You.
Take care.
Thank you so much. Stay well.
Bye.
Stay healthy.
Bye.
Thank you. Goodbye. Well, there's
bye.
Jose Roman. He's always been involved. Particularly, I met him years ago in the city of Yonkers. He was involved in politics as well. He ran for political office, very much engaged, and a very eloquent speaker. I've always respected his capacity to give expression to really quite complicated issues. And it's always good to speak to him, always a learning experience for me, and I respect him very much. I mean, it just doesn't get better than that. So a very, very good guy. Well, anyway, let's take a quick break, find out what's going on in the Yonkers Tribune, and then we'll be right back.
The Yonkers Tribune, named Home of the Acid-Tongued Bloggers by the New York Times, is a multifaceted news organization dedicated to keeping the citizens of Yonkers and Westchester informed via the internet and radio. Hezzy Aris is the tireless publisher, editor, and radio host of the Yonkers Tribune. He is a balding, bearded gnome, equipped with a digital camera and a steno pad at all times. Hezzy is frequently spotted in local meetings, translating the events into a Baroque prose style with an infusion of well-mannered outrage. The Yonkers Tribune attracts an informed, well-educated, affluent audience who hungers to know more about politics in all its permutations and nuances. Politics, says Hezzy, is our forte. Advertising inquiries are always welcome. Please call Hezzy Aris at 914-562-0834 or send an email to ehezi@hush.com.
And if you want to reach out to the Yonkers Tribune, you can reach them at a new phone number. It's 347-415-4326. That number is their office number, their cell number, their voicemail number, and their text number. So 347-415-4326. Now, let me just quickly look at something else that's been going on and try to cover some other news, which is interesting. And this is important for America's business. Evidently, Boeing has reported a $2.9 billion loss in the second quarter. It's the biggest quarterly loss ever. Well, it seems that Boeing reported a second quarter loss of $2.9 billion today as the grounding of 737 MAX planes following two deadly crashes continues to weigh on the company. The loss is the biggest ever in a single quarter for the aerospace giant, follows last week's announcement that Boeing would set aside $4.9 billion after taxes to compensate airlines for canceled flights and the delay in plane deliveries. So revenues tumbled 35.1% to $15.8 billion, reflecting the hit from a halt to deliveries of the 737 MAX, a top-selling plane. Quote, this is a defining moment for Boeing, and we remain focused on our enduring values of safety, quality, and integrity in all that we do as we work to safely return the 737 MAX to service, said the chief executive, Dennis Muilenburg. So the 737 MAX has been grounded since mid-March, following the March 10 Ethiopian airline crash. The second of two crashes that together claimed 346 lives. And Boeing is developing a software fix to address a problem with a flight handling system that was linked to both crashes. And airlines have repeatedly pushed back their target dates for returning the jets to service as the regulatory timeframe has dragged on. Most recently, when the Federal Aviation Administration in June identified problems with microprocessor during simulator testing. So discipline development and testing is underway, and we will submit the final software package to the FAA once we have satisfied all of their certification requirements, Boeing said. I hate the language. The language just stinks to high heaven. You know, just say it the way it is, but all these wonderful, wonderful terms, discipline development, testing underway, oh, please, just stop it already. These people have failed because they agreed, and they may conceivably have caused the total demise of supremacy in aerospace technology because of what they did. Unbelievable. So now Boeing has said it is targeting, early in the fourth quarter to win approval from regulators. Well, isn't that special? They're targeting. It'll be three quarters of a year. They'll be targeting now for the fourth quarter. That's going to be very exciting, and they had better get it right. Anyway, the company, which has pulled its full year profit forecast due to uncertainty about the MAX, boosted dividend payments in the second quarter. Compared with last year, Boeing spent $1.2 billion in dividends, up 20% from the year ago, period. Well, Boeing shares have lost more than 13% since the Ethiopian crash, a time period that has seen the broader Standard & Poor's 500 gain more than 9%. Isn't that fascinating? So, but Boeing shares rallied following last week's announcement about the $4.9 billion charge and an additional $1.7 billion in costs due to lower production levels of the 737 MAX. So although the costs were higher than expected, analysts said that investors were relieved that Boeing did not further cut production levels of the MAX and that the company still forecasts a return to service for the plane later this year. So the company is expected to be pushed for more details on its interactions with global regulators and customers during a conference call later this Wednesday morning. Now, Boeing will also likely be probed on whether the 737 MAX crisis is diverting attention from other key programs, such as the development of a new middle-range aircraft sought by airlines. Boeing on Wednesday, this is where they can lose their prominence. So Boeing on Wednesday pushed back the time frame for first flights of the 777X, a new long-haul plane under development. It pointed to the problems with the 777X engine, which is being built by General Electric. So the company said it is still targeting late 2020 for first delivery of the planes, but said, quote, there is a significant risk to this schedule given engine challenges, which are delaying first flight until early 2020. Shares fell 0.9% to $369.42 in pre-market trading. So very, very compelling to say the least. Now, this is very interesting based on the crisis in the Straits of Hormuz. Iran is hinting that it's open to a possible tanker swap and nuclear talks. It seems that President Hassan Rouhani hinted today that Iran is open to a possible tanker swap with Britain and indirect talks with the United States over its nuclear program and sanctions. Quote, we don't want tensions with some European countries, Rouhani said in comments to a cabinet meeting posted on the official website of his government. In a clear reference to the British, Rouhani said if they were, quote, to cease the incorrect acts that they have done, including that of Gibraltar, Iran's response would be, quote, appropriate to their actions. Iran and the United Kingdom are in the midst of a tense standoff over British authorities' seizure of an Iranian tanker off Gibraltar in early July and Iran's detention of a UK-flagged ship in Gulf waters last week. Rouhani also said that Iran would be open to talk should there be a, quote, ceasefire, end quote, and U.S. economic sanctions against the Islamic Republic. And hostilities between Iran and the United States have risen since last year when President Donald Trump withdrew the United States from the 2015 nuclear deal, which was aimed at limiting Tehran's nuclear program and began reimposing sanctions. Quote, in this regard, some countries are intermediaries, though they themselves say they are not mediators and are just expressing their own views, said Rouhani, referring to the British. There has been a correspondence from both sides on this issue, and we are continuing this, he added. Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe visited Tehran in June for talks, saying that diffusing tensions between Iran and the United States. Earlier this month, French President Emmanuel Macron sent his top diplomatic advisor, Emmanuel Bon, to Iran, quote, to piece together a de-escalation strategy. Both Japan and France have denied acting as intermediaries between Iran and the United States. So very, very compelling and important news, to say the least. Okay, so told you about what was expected in Puerto Rico. I'm going to just bear with me just for a moment. Let me just check if I want to just see if we may have missed the 1 second. I want to make sure if Roselló has actually resigned. Okay. One second. Oh, this is interesting. I think we mentioned this before. The chief of staff for Puerto Rico, Governor Ricardo Roselló, has submitted his resignation effective July 31. That was according to a letter obtained by CNN. And in the letter, Ricardo Yerandi Cruz writes, "The last few days have been extremely difficult for everyone. At this historical juncture, it is up to me to take the welfare of my family into consideration. The threats we've received can be tolerated as an individual, but I will never allow them to affect my home." The protests on the U.S. territory have been ongoing for more than a week, and older protesters said Monday's demonstrations were among the largest they've ever seen. The protests erupted after offensive group chat messages between the governor and members of his inner circle were published earlier this month. So we'll see exactly where that goes, but there is no notice at the moment. I'm just looking at the 1 second. One second here. I wanted to make sure. Oh, this is interesting. Elizabeth Warren demands a resignation of the Puerto Rican governor. And we had mentioned earlier about Letitia James, the New York State Attorney General, also demanding his resignation. And one split second. Yep, this is interesting. An impeachment committee is formed in Puerto Rico as protesters call for Governor Roselló to resign. And so thousands of people crowded the streets calling for Governor Ricardo Roselló to step down. The president of Puerto Rico's House of Representatives created a special committee on Friday to advise him on whether the governor committed impeachable offenses and so on. So this is going to be very, very interesting. But at the moment, it doesn't look as though anything's happened with respect to Roselló's resignation. So that's going to be very interesting. And let's just quickly look to see what else is up. This is very, very interesting. The United States has slapped a $5 billion fine on Facebook and toughens privacy oversight. U.S. regulators today slapped a record $5 billion fine on Facebook for privacy violations in a wide-ranging settlement that calls for revamping privacy controls and oversight at the social network. The Federal Trade Commission said the penalty was the largest ever imposed on any company for violating consumers' privacy and one of the largest penalties ever assessed by the U.S. government for any violation. However, two Democratic members of the five-member Federal Trade Commission dissented, arguing the agreement failed to go far enough to rein in Facebook business practices that endanger consumers. So the agreement requires Facebook to create a privacy committee within its board of directors to be appointed by an independent nominating committee. This would end, quote, unfettered control, end quote, of decisions on privacy by Facebook's chief executive Mark Zuckerberg, the Federal Trade Commission statement said. FTC or Federal Trade Commission Chairman Joe Simmons said that the penalty was appropriate to address concerns over Facebook's misuse of personal information. Quote, the magnitude of the $5 billion penalty and sweeping conduct relief are unprecedented in the history of the Federal Trade Commission, Simmons said in a statement. Quote, the relief is designed not only to punish future violations, but, quote, more importantly, to change Facebook's entire privacy culture to decrease the likelihood of continued violations, end quote. So under the agreement, Facebook CEO and staff must submit to the Federal Trade Commission quarterly certifications that the company is in compliance with a privacy program as well as an annual certification. Facebook also will be required to conduct a privacy review of every new or modified product, service, or practice before it is implemented, including for its WhatsApp and Instagram services. Well, Federal Trade Commission Commissioner Rohit Chopra rejected the settlement, saying it, quote, does little to change the business model or practices that led to the recidivism, end quote. In a separate statement, dissenting Federal Trade Commission Commissioner Rebecca Slaughter said that the deal appears to absolve Facebook and key executives from liability. She said the government should instead take Facebook to court. Mark Rottenberg of the Electronic Privacy Information Center called the FTC action too little, too late. And American consumers cannot wait another decade for the commission to act against a company that violates their privacy rights, Rottenberg said. Congress should move quickly to establish a data protection agency. And Charlotte Slayman of the consumer group Public Knowledge also expressed concern that the settlement would do little to change Facebook's business practices. Under this settlement, Facebook does not have to meaningfully change how it collects and uses your data, Slayman said. Facebook's top lawyer, Colin Stretch, said the agreement, quote, will require a fundamental shift in the way we approach our work, and it will change additional responsibility on people building our products at every level of the company, end quote. So the Federal Trade Commission last year reopened its investigation of Facebook, which reached a 2011 settlement on handling private data after a series of revelations on the mishandling of personal data. The move came after Facebook acknowledged data on tens of millions of users had been hijacked by Cambridge Analytica, a consultancy working in the 2016 Donald Trump campaign. In a separate agreement with stock market regulators, Facebook agreed to pay a $100 million penalty for making, quote, misleading disclosures regarding the risk of misuse of Facebook user data, end quote, in the investigation on Cambridge Analytica. Quote, we allege that Facebook exacerbated its disclosure failures when it misled reporters who asked the company about its investigations into Cambridge Analytica, end quote, said Aaron Schneider, head of the Regional Enforcement Division of the Securities and Exchange Commission. See what I say? Every time they expect even the press to give you the right news, but these companies don't say anything. That goes for government too. They lie, they cheat, they deny, they deny, they deny, they deny till you're just sick and blue in the face. Anyway, the Federal Trade Commission announced a separate settlement on the Cambridge Analytica case that calls for its app developer, Alexander Kogan, and former Cambridge Analytica CEO Alexander Nix to delete or destroy any personal information they collected. Cambridge Analytica itself has filed for bankruptcy and has not settled the Federal Trade Commission investigation. The news comes hours before Facebook was set to release its quarterly financial results. Zuckerberg has said the social network, which has more than 2 billion users worldwide, will be shifting away from its role as a digital town square, quote unquote, to focus on private connections and small groups. Facebook is also seeking to launch its own digital currency called Libra, which has raised concerns among regulators. That's another issue. But they're moving ahead. They are financially exploding with a fiscal capacity, and that's going to be a major, major problem, I think, for a lot of regulators. That is for sure. Now let's look and see what else is happening along the way. this is important with regard to. The British. It seems that Boris Johnson has been appointed the new British Prime Minister. And Boris Johnson formally took over as Britain's Prime Minister today, beginning his mission to deliver Brexit by October 31 by any means necessary. So the former London mayor, a divisive figure best known for his gaffes and rhetorical flourishes, was officially named as Prime Minister during a visit to Queen Elizabeth II at Buckingham Palace. So that is something that's necessary for you to know. And this is interesting as well. So far, it was not the, we learned in the news, it was not the special counsel's job to conclusively determine Donald Trump's innocence. So that's something that's going to, be looked into very, very closely. This is going to be for at least for who knows how many weeks in advance, but certainly in the next few days, this is what's going to be a major, major issue of discussion. So now let's just look for some other things here that that have taken center stage. But yes, I don't think we discussed this yet. The U.S. is moving to fast-track summary migrant deportations. It seems that U.S. President Donald Trump's administration yesterday announced new measures to expand its immigration crackdown by permitting more summary deportations of undocumented migrants. So the new rules allow immigration officials to pick up any undocumented migrant anywhere in the country. And if that person has been inside the United States less than 2 years, the officers can decide themselves to have them deported rather than have the case decided by an immigration judge. So formerly U.S. Customs and Border Protection, CBP, and Immigration Customs Enforcement, ICE agents could arrest and summarily deport a migrant only if they were detained within 100 miles of the U.S. border and were inside the country less than 2 weeks. Well, cases for detainees not meeting those parameters would have to be processed in an immigration court. The effect of that change will be to enhance national security and public safety while reducing government costs by facilitating prompt immigration determinations. That's what the Department of Homeland Security notice had published in the Federal Register. So the new designation will enable the Department of Homeland Security to address more effectively and efficiently the large volume of aliens who are present in the United States unlawfully, it said. The Trump administration has been frustrated by the backlog of immigration courts, which often allows detainees to disappear before their case is heard. There are currently nearly 1 million pending cases, according to the website Track Immigration, and the average waiting time for a hearing is nearly 2 years. So the new rule could accelerate deportation from the estimated 10.5 million undocumented migrants living in the United States, almost two-thirds of them for more than 10 years, according to the Pew Research Center. On Tuesday, Trump hit out at Guatemala, tweeting that he was considering halting remittances to or levying tariffs on the Central American country after its high court blocked the deal to designate it a, quote, safe third country, end quote, earlier this month. President Jimmy Morales said of Guatemala said that the court had interfered, quote, without authority, end quote, to halt the deal that would have obliged Guatemala to keep migrants seeking asylum in the United States to stay within its borders as their claims were processed. So very, very compelling news, to say the least, and something that needs to be considered. Well, this is very interesting, going on to the Middle East. A Syrian state media says that Israel carried out airstrikes in the country's south. An Israeli missile attack targeted Syrian military positions held by the government and its allies early today. On Wednesday, Syria's state news agency had advised, and the missiles were fired into the south of the country, close to the Golan Heights, an area annexed by Israel and occupied by Israel. The Israeli enemy launched an aggression after midnight against the Tal al-Hara area, the Sana, the Syrian news agency. Agency said today, adding that there were reports of damage to property. The attacks were earlier described as probably Israeli by the British-based Syrian Observatory for Human Rights, who said they targeted Tal al-Hara at Indara province, south of Damascus, and two areas in the neighboring province of Quneitra. So the regime's anti-aircraft defense has been activated to counter the attack, the director of the observatory, Rami Abdel Rahman, had said, and some missiles have been shot down, others have hit their target. The observatory reported loss of life, quote unquote, without giving further details. Israel has carried out hundreds of airstrikes in Syria since the beginning of the conflict in 2011, targeting forces loyal to President Bashar al-Assad and the regime's allies, Iran and Hezbollah. Syrian conflict has ruled more than 300, has killed more than 370,000 people and drawn in world power since it started with a brutal repression of anti-government protests. Israeli strikes have previously targeted Tal al-Hara, where Hezbollah has installed a radar system, and the Syrian regime has erected anti-aircraft batteries, according to the observatory. At the end of June, six civilians and nine government fighters were killed in Israeli attacks near Damascus and in the central province of Homs, it added. So Israel says it is determined to prevent its arch foe, Iran, from entrenching itself militarily in Syria, where Tehran backs Assad's regime, and the Jewish state insists that it has the right to continue to target positions held by Iran and its Lebanese ally Hezbollah out of self-defense. So the strikes came after Hezbollah's leader said earlier this month that the group's rockets could reach key Israeli sites along the Mediterranean coast, including Tel Aviv. And Hassan Nasrallah also said that Iran was, quote, able to bombard Israel with ferocity and force, end quote, but, end, quote, will not start a war, end quote. Now, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu countered that his country would deliver a, quote, crushing military blow, end quote, on both Hezbollah and Lebanon if it were to attack. So we got trouble, as they say, and so these are big issues. And let's just look and see what else is going on. Bear with me a moment. I want to see what else is happening in 1 second. One second here. Oh, this is interesting. After only being in power 6 months in Brazil, Jair Bolsonaro's Brazilian government has already undertaken austerity measures to drastically reduce public spending, as promised during the election campaign, and major cuts have hit the education sector and especially universities, which Bolsonaro and his far-right government say are infiltrated with left-wing ideology. So that's something that we'll be studying into the future to see what else is going on. This is interesting with regard to Haiti. Haiti's president names a new prime minister, his fourth in less than 3 years. Haiti's President Jovenel Moïse on Monday named Fritz William Michel Prime Minister, following the resignation of his predecessor who failed to win parliamentary approval for his government. Seemed formerly an executive in the Ministry of Economy and Finance, Michel is Moïse's fourth head of government in his 2.5 years in office. The president made the announcement in a Monday night Twitter post, but must formalize it with an official decree. So Michel's appointment came after consultation between Moïse and the leaders of the two chambers of parliament, signaling a resumption of dialogue between the three political heavyweights after months of turmoil. Moïse has had his power to appoint ministers challenged and faced calls to resign after the High Court of Auditors in May released a report saying that Moïse was at the center of an embezzlement scheme that siphoned off Venezuelan aid money meant for fixing roads. I'm looking you right in the eye to tell you today, your president, the one you voted for, is not involved in corruption, Moïse responded at an official ceremony in the capital of Port-au-Prince last month. Well, evidently he's not being believed. Anyway, Michel faces the tough task of restoring public confidence in Haiti's leadership. 67% of Haitians live below poverty line, and the inflation rate has risen past 18%, and violent crime has surged. Port-au-Prince, the capital, is particularly hard hit, with clashes between armed gangs occurring almost daily. The United Nations in June released a report saying that at least 26 people were killed during a 2018 massacre in a slum in the capital, at which several members of the police and a government representative were allegedly present. I tell you, it's unbelievable. There seems to be crisis and crisis like this all over the world, and it is literally an unbelievable set of circumstances that is taking place. Unbelievable. And total disrespect of people's rights. This is very interesting as well. Evidently, Imran Khan claims that the Pakistani intelligence led the CIA to bin Laden. Pakistan's main spy agency provided the United States with a lead that helped them find and kill al-Qaeda leader Osama bin Laden. That's what Prime Minister Imran Khan said on Monday. Pakistan has until now officially denied having any knowledge of the terror chief until he was shot dead in a nighttime raid by U.S. Special Forces on May 2nd of 2011. An incident that was a major national embarrassment and caused ties between the two countries to plummet. Khan, who is visiting Washington on his first official trip, made his claim in an interview with Fox News when he was asked whether his country would release a jail doctor whose fake immunization drive helped the United States track and kill bin Laden in 2011. This is a very emotive issue because Shakil Afridi in Pakistan is considered a spy, he told the host Brett Beyer, referring to the doctor. We in Pakistan always felt that we were an ally of the United States, and if we had been given the information about Osama bin Laden, we should have taken him out. Beyer then asked if Khan understood the skepticism around the Inter-Services Intelligence Agency, ISI, for leaking key information, to which Khan replied. And yet it was ISI that gave the information which led to the location of Osama bin Laden. If you ask CIA, it was ISI which gave the initial location through the phone connection. It was not immediately clear what Khan was referring to and did not provide more detail. Now, though Pakistan officially denies knowing that bin Laden was living on its territory, Asad Durrani, a former spy master, told Al Jazeera back in 2015 that the ISI probably knew where he was hiding and hoped to use him as a bargaining chip before he was killed. The 9/11 mastermind was tracked down after a 10-year manhunt to Abbottabad and a garrison town north of Islamabad, where Pakistan's military academy is headquartered, sparking allegations authorities were colluding with the terror group. I've been to Abbottabad and Islamabad and much of Pakistan. Anyway, a leaked Pakistani government report in 2013 said that bin Laden arrived in Pakistan in the spring or summer of 2002 after the 2001 U.S.-led invasion of Afghanistan and settled in Abbottabad in August of 2005. The report, which coined the term governance implosion syndrome to explain the extent of official failures to detect him, said he was once stopped for speeding and enjoyed wearing a cowboy hat. So two former senior Pakistani military officials advised agent France Presse back in 2015 that a defector from Pakistani intelligence assisted the United States in its hunt for bin Laden, but denied the two countries had officially worked together. Very, very interesting, don't you think? Okay, let's just look and see if anything else is happening that we should speak about. And I think we are fine, but I'm not sure. Bear with me a moment. One second. All right, one more second here. Okay. I think that we've really completed all that we can do for you today. So it's about 20 minutes to 12. I want to wish you just a great day. Oh, before I do that, before I send you off, tomorrow we're going to speak to Lori and John Wiles, and we're going to speak to them about, if I remember correctly, it was this Chevy Blazer. Bear with me a second, because I know that I have this posted somewhere, and I'm just confused of what it is. We've already posted it on the Yonkers Tribune website. Bear with me a moment here. Okay. I know it's the Chevy Blazer. I could smell it. Yeah, here it is. It's the 2019 Chevy Blazer RS front-wheel drive. There's an article about it, and we'll be reviewing that vehicle tomorrow at 10 o'clock. So hopefully you'll be able to join us then. And I guess that's about it. So be very, very interesting. And I think that that's it. So let me go back to our studio screen. Where are we here? Okay. Yeah, I think that's it. So hopefully you'll join us tomorrow. And thank you for being with us today. And really a major, major thank you to Jose Roman for explaining to us what's been going on in Puerto Rico. Wish him a safe flight home and to see his family. And we hope to stay in touch with him at least once a month to just see what's going on there, because Puerto Rico is going through a major transition, and we'll see what the attitude is on the island and the challenges that they face and what the prospects are with respect to the United States relinquishing any power or control over the island. So we'll see what happens. Anyway, all the best. Take care and goodbye. Thank you.